With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's Wednesday night, which means it's time for TF3, and there are three of us here, and there are three people who make up TF3 in that sense. Dave, welcome back. You're on a bus.
Yeah, just on the bus home, so apologies for any beeping, dinking, or any noises about that.
Sort of brings a bit of texture to the podcast, which I like. And Chris, you are not on a bus.
I'm not, I'm stationary.
Stationary. You parked the bus in many ways.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why you like it. You're not on a bus, and you've not parked it. It's completely irrelevant, in fact, to your situation. But let's get straight down to it, guys. Tonight, in the EFL Cup, which is where we're going to start. Let's start with Newcastle, Chris, because they went through against Birmingham. No, wait, is this the EFL Cup?
It's the FA Cup.
The EFL FA Cup. Chris, Newcastle went through against Birmingham for the first time in, was it 7 years?
I believe. It's exactly 5 years and 6 days.
Don't even know the tournament, mate, so it doesn't matter.
The last game, I looked this up, the last game they won in this competition was a 2-1 home win against Blackburn, and Jonas Gutierrez scored the win. It was a wonderful goal as well. In fact, both goals that day, if I remember right, were beautiful goals.
A lot's changed since then. Obviously, the team have gone, I'm assuming, up and down since then. And then up and down. And then back down.
No, just down. That was the season, I guess, season or two after promotion.
Okay, interesting. Wow. You guys really have been on a journey over the last few years, but you find yourselves 3-1 and through against Birmingham. Shelvey inspired this one.
He's massive. You talk about the heartbeat of a midfield, that's Jonjo Shelvey. It's not just his passing, it's his ability to control the game as well. It's something I think I've only really come to appreciate since watching him in person. Is midfielders with with real quality can put the ball anywhere they want in the field. I think there's an underrated skill in being able to know when to hold on to the ball and when to start to move the tempo up a little bit. And it's really not an easy skill. It's very much a judgment call based on the player and understanding how a lot of little passes can build to something much bigger. So, yes, whether he can do that in the Premiership is a massive question mark, because the truth is, consistently, he hasn't done that in his career thus far. I think the thing you have to remember with him, though, is that he arrived on the scene very young. He joined Liverpool at a very young age. Again, was seen as a precocious talent. And even now, I think he's 24.
Yep.
So he's, you would argue that he isn't near completion in terms of his potential. And I think that's something that we forget is that, you know, players mature at different times. With that said, tonight, I think he reinforced why he's so central to that team. Without him, the backup options. I feel bad saying Isaac Hayden because he's more defensively minded, but the likes of Colback, Tiote, who looks like he's off anyway, they're just light years away from what he can do. And I really don't think that's an overestimation. The difference in quality, decision-making, even just application of where he wants to put the ball, Colback and Coke just can't really match it.
Do you ever think about that, Chris? I mean, how reliant Rafa Benitez's systems tend to be on those two central defensive midfielders, very often one more prominent than the other.
Yes, I think it's a little bit of a concern, because you would argue that it's very difficult for a squad to facilitate two players of Shelvey's quality and importance and keep both of them happy, because realistically the selling point for Shelvey of being at a club like Newcastle or being in this position is everything's built around you, so you are the centrepiece. That gives you confidence for someone like him who needs that. It's integral. It's very difficult to bring in another midfielder, let's say a Lawrence McKenna, and say, okay, you two are going to have this same role, but I promise you're going to have the same importance. It's an impossible situation to manage.
I mean, that's why he was very lucky in that sense with Liverpool, with Xabi Alonso and Javier Mascherano. And then essentially he slightly changed it up with like the Casemiro and maybe, I mean, I think he struggled at times to find an apt partner for him, but maybe a Kroos or a Modric at Real Madrid. And very often at Napoli, he was let down by that lack of a structure.
Exactly. I think that's a fantastic point. And I know Newcastle haven't achieved promotion at this point, but if you talk to a lot of supporters, they are kind of casting their eye forward in case they do make that leap and saying, well, what happens with this team? Because I think if there's one thing you can draw from this season, it's that they're going to need a significant overhaul to be Premier League quality. Mm. There's pieces in there that I think can cope. Matt Ritchie, Shelvey, Gale to an extent, maybe even Hayden if you know, he takes to the league properly. A lot of them, though, it's going to need, you would argue, a similar summer to the one that just went, where they brought a lot of players in because they were able to sell a lot. But I don't think there's going to be that same intake. It's going to be a lot of outgoings in terms of spending money. So that's definitely the question that's sort of circulating now, is if they go up, when they go up, whichever you think is more likely, how does that Shelvey situation play out? Does it stay the same, or does Benitez try to maybe move away from it and pick something a little bit more reliable? Because when they were in the relegation scrap under him last season, he didn't seem that taken with Shelvey, to be honest. He benched him for a few games.
Good point. What about that, Chris? I mean, they've beaten Birmingham tonight. Oof.
It's really tough for Birmingham. I have tremendous sympathy for them and their supporters, because you have someone in Gary Rowett who, I get mixed reports in terms of the quality of football he was playing. I haven't seen enough of them where I feel comfortable putting my own name to an opinion. But he was certainly doing a good job. At least the league table suggested that. And he wasn't blessed with huge budgets or any kind of financial power. And then he's taken out and Zola's put in. And, you know, it's funny, a similar thing happened with Zola at Watford, where I want to say it was Sean Dyche that was pulled out and Zola was put in. And there was uproar at first. And then over time, you kind of saw why, because they wanted to bring a continental squad in and it made more sense. I don't see that same turn of events occurring at Birmingham City. It looks still to me like a club that is trying to play things quite clever, buying people like Shea Adams, who are in League One and have come from non-league and maybe don't have the highest price tags, but still have potential. Sort of polishing gems, if you will.
Yeah. Good point.
And I think that's the difficulty for them, is that, is Zola the man for that? He's not someone I can think of that has done that much in his managerial career.
No, I mean, maybe he is that inspirational figure in that sense. And I think he certainly is considered to be one of those that is on a good track. But maybe sometimes you feel like it's the right combination at the wrong time. I'm playing the right notes, not necessarily in the right order. Which it felt very similar to in Liverpool's FA Cup replay tonight. They lined up with yet another young side, including Ajaria, including Trent Alexander-Arnold, and of course including Stewart at the base of midfield. Moreno and Coutinho on one side, on the left, and then on the other side, a combination of Woodburn and, of course, Trent overlapping. It only ended 1-0 to Liverpool, and this Liverpool side struggled to break down Plymouth in the end. Chris, you watched the entirety of this one. Liverpool obviously went through on a rare thing in the first place, which is a Lucas goal. Last time he scored was 7 years ago. Essentially, it sort of boils down to exactly the same as the previous fixture. Plymouth tried to break in Liverpool and did very well. They hit the outside of the woodwork and arguably created the better of the chances in the game. And also to get the best out of their set pieces. But Liverpool beat them on a set piece and then tried to control the possession in the same way they did in the previous leg.
Yeah, I must admit, to digress slightly, I thought Lucas's post-match interview was very funny.
Why?
Because I think it was Danny Kelly. Is that the guy, the BT Sport guy?
Probably, yeah.
He informed Lucas that he hadn't scored in 7 years, and Lucas replied, "I scored in training last week," which...
very good.
I thought, you know what, we're kindred spirits there, because I definitely would count training goals as well.
It's also that Jurgen Klopp's words, essentially, coming out of Lucas's mouth, it sounds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think what you can say is Klopp's made a real commitment to playing youth in this tournament and seeing it as a potential pathway for the players that are on the fringes of the squad to push themselves forward. I think that's very admirable. From a Plymouth perspective, I see the fear of being embarrassed in these kind of fixtures. I also think they could have been more aggressive. I think when they really push Liverpool, in the few instances where they really got at them, you could see just little wobbles because, of course, these aren't vastly experienced players. Mm. I think in that respect, Plymouth might look at this tomorrow when everything's calmed down and say, you know, we had a better chance there than I think we gave ourselves. But I think from Klopp's perspective, it was a good chance to see how many of the technical players that he has, because I think you look at Woodburn and a lot of the midfield lads, they're all very good on the ball. But how do you apply that when you've got someone who is a fairly grizzled veteran of the Football League coming at you, being very aggressive, that kind of thing? It's a lot of variables that just aren't present in under 23 football in the Development League. So I think you'll have seen a potential in Woodburn that, say, next season when they get European football, which I think they will, that's a moment where he can be brought in. Because assuming it's not Champions League and it's Europa League, yeah, that's not the highest on Liverpool's priority list, and that's a conversation we can have another time. Mm. There will be moments, though, where you have to trust Woodburn, period, and players of his ilk, like they did against Manchester United at the weekend. And I think the more you know about the player, the easier it is to trust them and the easier it is to choose the words that you say to them before they go out. Yeah. And the easier it is to gauge them as people.
They definitely saw more of that tonight. I mean, apparently Trent Alexander-Arnold is one of those people that Klopp is seeming to trust right now, starting him on the weekend against Manchester United and, of course, starting him again against Plymouth. Dave, let's flick back to last night. Have you gotten off the bus yet, Dave? I mean, you're making noise. That's just a noise. Are you off the bus? Oh, no, there he goes.
Dave O'Brien there.
He's literally just made noise and hung up. I was speaking to Dave earlier, actually, and Dave was saying how much he appreciated Sam Allardyce and how much he wanted to celebrate Allardyce and Pulis and their contribution to English football, how he feels they're under-celebrated. Chris, can you echo that or not?
I'm going to struggle to, I'll be very honest.
Yes, I thought that would be a tricky subject for you. But he did get a win with Christian Benteke getting two of the goals. The two goals in a 2-1 win where they went 1-0 down to Bolton in the FA Cup.
They did. It obviously meant a lot to Allardyce because of past associations. There was still a struggle for Crystal Palace. It was not a 2-0 and then consolation goal situation. And I think you can read a lot into that in not just in terms of the final score, but in what order the goals were, how the match actually unfolded. I think the thing is, a lot of people, and I was having this debate with someone last night on Twitter, the idea that Allardyce is a fraud, which is the word that has been replaced for banter in the football lexicon. I don't think he is, personally. I think he has a skill set that is very easy to define and some would argue very easy to replicate. The important thing is it takes time. And I think if you look at Sunderland as a case study, his first sort of 9-10 games were not very good. In fact, I remember Newcastle fans kind of consoling themselves at the end of last season saying that if Sunderland had been placed in that same position and Allardyce had taken his first 10 results in the 10 games that they got, this is all very convoluted, they would have gone down and Newcastle would have stayed up. I think, honestly, Palace in general are a little bit of a mismatched squad for me. I look at some of the players in there, you know, there's talk about them selling Kabay. I still think Kabay's got a part to play. I'm very surprised that they want to just give up on him, because to me, he is, we talked about midfielders that can dictate, he is very much in that mould. I'd say he's better than Shelby by a distance at this point in his career. And he was easily one of the best midfielders I'd ever watched on his day when he was motivated. So maybe that's the issue, is a lack of motivation. I think, honestly, there's no worry for me that Palace are going to go down at this point, purely because they have the kind of defenders that Allardyce likes to work with. And they've got those little sprinkles of something in the final third, like Zaha. Townsend, admittedly, has been pretty useless. But I think in a little bit more of a disciplined system that transitions quickly, he'll find his way eventually. But even still, Ponchin can come in there and replace him. There's options for them. He did do a lot of business last January, Allardyce, and that was instrumental, I think, in keeping Sunderland up. Be curious to see what, if anything, he does this January, because there is talk that Kabay is going to go to Marseille, so that should free up some money for him.
Very good point. A lot of people want to go to Marseille, Chris. Payet.
Just Payet, I think, isn't it? No one else?
What, Payet and Kabay? That's two. That's a lot. That's a 200% rise.
I mean, it's, yeah, it's a funny one with Marseille. So I watched them at the weekend against Monaco, and they had only conceded one goal at home prior to that game, and they got absolutely stuffed by what is a fantastic Monaco side, by the way. If you're in France and, you know, get the chance to watch them, do it. 100% do it, because I can guarantee you'll see entertainment one way or the other. The thing with Marseille and them trying to buy players, though, it's essentially been a cash injection, I think, by the new ownership, and they're clearly trying to make some kind of statement. The bizarre thing is, I'm not sure if they need someone like Payet, because they've got, and that might sound harsh, but they've got Cabella, they've got Tovan on loan, so, you know, you would argue, I think it's a 24-year-old or a 29-year-old, that makes the better sense to buy the younger guy in, especially because Payet is going to cost an obscene amount of money in wages.
I suppose so.
There's talk he would want 100 a week.
You're not getting that in Marseille, are you?
Yeah, and it's a lot by French league standards. I really only think PSG can kind of hit that figure realistically. Although saying that, as I'm sure we'll come on to, Lyon look like buying Depay. So it's, I can kind of see why Pai wants to go. I can see why Kabay wants to go as well. I'll be surprised if both deals come off. I think it will be a case if they pick one or the other, because I feel like this is a little bit of the Marseille ownership posturing a bit and sort of flashing the money just a little bit to try and suggest that things are okay and everyone should be happy.
Dave, you're back
now.
Because
in fairness, Drogba did want to go as well. Actually, you make a valid point that Drogba had made overtures to go, and the Marseille fans unveiled a banner that essentially said, go forth and multiply.
And that they did. Dave, you're back now.
Oh, yeah, I'm back. So apologies, guys. Basically, I got into my house, got off the bus. It was a great journey. Very interesting.
In the house.
And then my phone died. So I was about to answer the question. My phone just died. And that was it. Game over.
What a story.
Back on the laptop now, though, so any questions, I can do it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you then, Dave, about a man departing. Departing.
Departing?
Manchester United. Maybe because you hate him and you never want to play him again. I mean, you know, why is he leaving? So many word plays in 1 minute. Why is he leaving? Why is he leaving?
I think it's the right thing to do for him and Manchester United. I think it's a good option to go to Lyon. I love Fakir, I love Lacazette. I think with Depay, that's a really mean front three. That's a front three that you could play in a diamond. You could play as a 4-3-3. You could play as a 4-2-3-1. There's a lot of variation there, and Depay is perfect for the French league right now in his career. He's a guy that looks like he's got such potential. He's a guy that can beat a man time and time again, and we've seen in the 44 minutes, I think, he's played this season for Manchester United, he's actually a decent player. But unfortunately, with Anthony Martial in there, with a player that can do better defensive work than Memphis Depay, you're kind of at a lost leader there. And going to Lyon makes sense. It really does make sense. There's a lot of great stuff that he could do in the French league, and he will tear it up with Lacazette, who's been one of the best forwards in recent years. You know, there's a lot of talk about him. Oh, he scores too many penalties. Shut up. Keep that to yourself. You know, he takes his chances, scores his goals. If he scores a few penalties, whatever, he's scoring the penalties. He's still putting the ball in the back of net. Lacazette's been a top forward the last three seasons. If Depay can learn from Lacazette, fantastic. If he can learn from Brekia, fantastic. That is such a hungry young team. I love it.
But I mean, Dave, that is a sale. It's not a loan, it's a sale.
But sometimes you've got to make those decisions, Lawrence, in your life. You've got to cut people away. And unfortunately, that's what's happened to Memphis Depay. You've got to cut them away. You've got to let them live in their own world where they can try and develop their own world. Because quite frankly, at Manchester United, Memphis Depay didn't live up to his hype. He's not scoring the free kicks. He's not taking players on the same way he used to do. He's not causing that problem in the counter-attack. And unfortunately, it looks like he can't defend. He didn't work in a Louis van Gaal system, and he's not worked in a Jose Mourinho system. And unfortunately, that's modern football. As a forward, you need to learn how to defend. And I hope that's something that he picks up at Marseille, is learning how to defend. Sometimes. And maybe you might get that.
But sometimes, Dave, you sound like you're composing the latest Sting song. Sometimes you sound like it's a collaboration with Richard Keys. I can't work it out. If you love someone, set them free on the left wing.
Hopefully, it's a combination, and these young players will listen to the rantings and the ravings of myself, and it will make them better players.
Yes, as I believe Bielsa so eloquently put it once.
From the album Dark Arts.
Dave's an Englishman.
I would be telling him to dive all the time, and unfortunately, what I believe in.
Would you?
I think so. I think diving's part of the game. I think diving is part of the modern game. It is tricking the referee, but in the same way, being cheating, as we put it, for people that dive. But it's the same way as being gamemanship in any other. If you pull someone's shirt, are you cheating?
Yes.
You said cheating trick somebody like political correctness, like cheating, as they call it.
For example, I agree.
It's the PC brigade.
It's the PC brigade in football, and I think that England as a society needs to accept diving as well as they accept touching people's balls, putting your finger in your bum, pushing someone over in the box. Now this is football, Chris. This is your Sunday league shit where things go down and people go, oh, somebody's dived. Yeah, X, Y, and Z at the weekend, you're gonna punch someone in the back of the head and the referee's not gonna see it and you're gonna get away with it. Same shit.
Dave, how many times have you put your fingers up someone's bum?
Mate, part of football. Part of football, Lawrence. I used to play rugby. I'm not part of that game.
Yeah, nothing.
Never playing five-a-side with him, whether I'm on his team or not.
Watch yourself, Chris. Don't want to sit next to me, mate.
No, you're not working hard enough. Slip.
Yeah, might end up with a finger up the bum. Say one up the bum, no arm down, is Dave, I'm sure. Sure says. I don't know what to
say. Checkmate.
Okay.
I can't believe I've stumped him.
Oh, it's what happens when you hang out.
Anyway, Lawrence, we're talking about cheating. And I just brought some facts up, so whatever, we'll continue now. Diving is great.
Chris, do you have any reply?
I don't think diving is great. I think it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it has a place. I think certainly you're under no obligation to always try and stay on your feet. I certainly think instances where I've seen a player do everything in his power to stay upright.
What about pulling your shirt then, Chris?
No, stop it.
If you genuinely feel it, then go for it. But if you're embellishing it needlessly, I don't think there's a point in that.
It's cheating and there's cheating. There's a fine line. I'm an advocate of diving. Bring back the diving.
Yeah, but Dave, the point is it's not diving. If someone's pulling your shirt, you've been fouled.
Diving what is, that is it's going the, down without
the,
touch.
The flip side of that, right? So Lawrence, right? We're in the box, right? And you give me a little shirt tug. That's a foul.
Dave, let's say in this situation. Yeah.
Lawrence, we're in a box, right? And you touch me where I don't want you to touch me. Is that a foul or not?
I mean, football is a
pending court case in some counties.
Yeah. Dave, where have I mean, yes.
Sorry, I just trying to. I think the rap diving's getting. There's a lot more. There's crimes that are put on the side that are pushed away that are as equal.
Like what?
I want to say to Lawrence. But anything, any gamesmanship. I think diving is gamesmanship, and that's a fact.
I love the idea of Dave playing football and someone sticking their finger up his arse and his dad or his granddad going, ah, classic gamesmanship.
Well, firstly, Chris, I'd turn around the lamp, the cunt, and I get sent off red card straight away. But
Jesus,
it happens in the game.
Now I've got to mark this one explicit because you just said that word. I mean, I didn't realise you listened to so many True Geordie podcasts, but all right, mate.
Lawrence, you're part of the True Geordie podcast. You are one of the True Geordie.
Okay. Right, let's move on. Today, Vine finishes. And a lot of people are sharing their greatest vines of all time. Do you guys have a favourite football vine? There are some good ones. There's the old classic of Rafa making his name tag come along the bottom of the screen. That was a good vine back in the day.
That's a good shout. There's none that jump out, unfortunately.
I mean, it was a great place, essentially. I mean, for a while, it was where footballs made their name, wasn't it, Chris?
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. I think, from a technological standpoint, Instagram has probably killed that, because I don't think there's a limit on Instagram videos, is there?
I think it's 1 minute. But obviously, you know, you can fit a whole highlights package in 1 minute. Or it's 1 minute something, you know. Dave, could you do very quick tactics analysis in 5 seconds?
6 seconds, right, Lawrence?
Sure, whatever, mate. I mean, it was 5 seconds. It was actually five, but it was six.
Let's do one right now. So if you're like 3, 5, 2, that's already 3 seconds gone. So yeah. All you say next is 4, 3, 3, and is that the vine?
I don't know, Dave, is it?
Maybe, Lawrence, if that's what you try to show each other, you know, the tactical breakdown of those two systems combined, and that's the game.
Have you been smoking something, Dave?
No, I'm just trying, as Vine is a platform that I quite enjoyed and quite, you know, got involved with, it's interesting they are shutting it down. They are trying to move to more of a, you know, a Snapchat-centric world. Like Instagram, we're seeing, it's quite an interesting, you know, if we're looking at tech, if we're looking at technology in terms of, you know, current market, social media, moving from Vine to Instagram to Facebook.
I didn't ask you about this. I literally didn't ask.
Lawrence, I'm giving you the overview of the world tonight, mate.
Dave, how much have we had to drink?
Nothing, I'm fine.
Okay. I felt like I was getting a pitch in some meeting. It's like, oh, Vine's gone, but what now? And Dave's like, well, it's the next world.
I think it's something we never touched on. I quite, you know, I'm big in my tech. That's where my job's come from. So fucking laugh at me. This is like where I've come from in my life. And if you ask any tech-related questions, Lawrence, I'm going to give you an answer.
Ever stuck your finger in a floppy drive?
Many times.
Okay. I mean, Dave, do you have a favourite... I mean, what's your favourite tech platform then, Dave?
Well, YouTube, obviously. Simple, right?
Is it?
There's a great place where you can... upload your video. One of the big things I find quite interesting about YouTube
is that the lyrics to Cheers.
Stop it, let me continue. So in terms of obviously I worked in football media and football sort of, you know, news before. One of the interesting things is YouTube creates a platform where you've got to pay no costs to upload your video and contain your video. Whereas if you look around the market, you're paying X amount of money to upload it, transcode it and so forth. And YouTube is a free marketplace, and that's why I love YouTube, Lawrence.
I mean you could argue you pay with other things, but yeah, fair enough. You don't pay directly. I get your point. It's supposed to be supposed to thicken the amount of people that can upload, and it has. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is up for debate. People have a voice. Fantastic. Any other transfer news that people want to touch on while we're on the podcast? Before I get into the Q's and the A's?
The Griezmann to United's, you know, grown again this week. You know, 100, I think it's £100 million maybe for Griezmann to move to Manchester United. Again, would be a great fit for United. But again, you're going to have to work on where Paul Pogba is going to play in the midfield versus where Griezmann is going to play. I think that's an issue that France had and Didier Deschamps didn't really address till the latter stages and, you know, eventually made the wrong choice and played them in a 4-2-3-1 and it didn't quite work out. obviously the final, Paul Pogba not dictating, getting found out against their midfield diamond, which was a replica to what Liverpool played this weekend. So fascinating stuff there. But no, Griezmann to United would be fantastic, but there'd be a problem for Mourinho.
Why?
I think it's what system you're going to play. You're going to play a 4-3-3 or you're going to play a 4-2-3-1. We've seen Paul Pogba can't really grasp the 4-2-3-1 in terms of playing as one of those central midfielders because he wants to get into the box, because he wants to be in that final third. And I kind of agree that that's kind of where you want Paul Pogba. He's a flair player. He's a player that you get the ball. You know, we saw the assist he got, what was it, against Swansea, where, you know, kind of received the ball, great turn, played the free ball to Zlatan, a fantastic goal. That's where you want Paul Pogba right now, not in defensive midfield. I feel like, you know, in the latter stages of the career, yes, defensive midfield, he's going to be absolutely fantastic in terms of how we can switch to play. His passing range is there. His ability to beat a man, you know, if someone's pressurising him, see you later in deep in midfield if it's a striker. So I think that's that balance between getting Griezmann in the side but also getting the best out of Paul Pogba, which is a system that we may never have seen in football. So maybe it's something Mourinho's got to work on.
How hard does he have to work on it, Dave?
Exceedingly hard. Maybe he even goes for the Allegri 4-3-2-1, maybe. No, two attacking midfielders. When we were talking about Pjanic and Dybala on the Football Republic before, maybe that could be a place where you have Griezmann and Pogba behind a striker, behind Zlatan. But then again, you're throwing out Martial, Mkhitaryan. You know, there's a lot of players there. Man United is a big problem because there's too many players in a small base and you've got to play within a system. And signing someone like Griezmann just makes that problem even worse.
Good, Chris. Griezmann, I mean, do you really want to see him go to United or would you rather see him go somewhere else, Chris?
It still amazes me how much the clubs at the top can spend these days.
All right, granddad.
No, in respects to, like, there are Premier League teams that have their record transfer fee is still not even a quarter of that. It's like teams in the same league I'm talking about. I'm not saying, oh, isn't it a disgrace that Plymouth can't spend 100 million? I'm talking about the disparity just in the league that they all play in. There are moments where I just wish that Manchester United would have a little bit more of a thrifty approach. It seems like they just go out and I remember Rafa Honigstein making this point once about the Premier League in general, that clubs just solve their problems with money. It'd be nice if they kind of went out and just tried to coach through them.
I mean, Dave, arguably they are trying to coach through them, right?
I think it's a difficult balance. It's a difficult balance between success and making the top four, making the top six, making the top 10 with the players you have and the components that you have in that system. And yes, it takes a bit of time if you want to coach some, you know, player to play a different style or to move on to a different position. It's going to take a little bit longer than getting that ready-made piece. And unfortunately, I kind of agree with Chris in terms of the majority of the Premier League, they do try and solve things with money. But again, I think the coaching is there and it's viable. From Manchester United, it's a very good point in terms of how the coaching has worked this season. Like, you look at United over the last 3 years with Moyes, with LVG, that did their own right thing in the right time. But then you come with someone with Louis van Gaal, you come with someone with Jose Mourinho, and it's really showing that edge, that small edge of coaching. You know, a great stat, United have run the fewest kilometres per game in the Premier League. That's incredible. They are doing as well as they are. But
they're lazy fucks.
Well, they fuck lazy fucks. It's a different style. It's a counter-attacking style. It's a positional style which Jose Mourinho brings. Yeah, Jurgen Klopp's trendy. Yeah, Jurgen Klopp plays all these long balls, whatever, and all this crap inside. And, you know, if we're going to go and address that point in its own right, the long ball that everyone's been raving about is a long pass. So already
we'll address it,
all these... So this big argument, Lawrence, you've heard about this debate, that Man United have played fewer long balls than Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. It's not a long ball, it's a long pass. That means it's a pass over 35 yards, which means the stat is irrelevant to compare a long ball side to another side. Because, for example, you play a switch from centre-half or defensive midfield out wide, that is considered a long ball. So you're looking at Swansea, maybe two seasons ago. Most long balls in the Premier League by country mile because it's a long pass, not a long ball. And that's unfortunately something Opta slightly let themselves down in terms of the definition. Oh, I don't think it's Opta's fault. Actually, I think it's the community's fault of not understanding what Opta is saying. And we're drawn in this fact that we're trying to make X point over Y point. What's wrong with long ball football? Mourinho, Inter Milan, that was a brilliant side. Diego Milito, Schneider, Eto'o, Pandev, what a team that was. But they played a very much a direct long ball style. Nothing wrong with it. And again, it's embracing what's popular and what's hip and what's not. And that's unfortunately where United are right now. We're not cool. I don't give a shit.
true. You are not cool.
Play a different style. Yeah, play a different style, whatever. I don't get it. You know, play long ball football, whatever. That's cool. Bring on Marouane Fellaini and Zlatan Ibrahimovic and putting them up against Lovren and Klavan, that is a way to win football games.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm not averse to that. It's fine.
Okay.
Got to win the game.
Yeah.
That's great. It's enjoyable. But long, as in the long ball, so one thing that you got to pick up from this podcast, a long ball that's been defined by Opta is a long pass. Over 35 yards. That's what we've got to finish on.
Sometimes not a long ball. Yeah, I mean, Chris, to address that, the trendiness of any team. I mean, Chris, over the past two games, a team that went on a 40-run streak is now on a two-game losing streak. Real Madrid lose 2-0. Or was it 2-1? Sorry, 2-1 tonight.
Lol.
There you go. I'm going to top that.
Well, I mean, Chris, the point I was going to make was both of those systems which beat Real Madrid, both Bielsa mm-hmm. systems, or Bielsa disciples in that sense.
That's a very astute point. I think the thing is, I always find this with Real Madrid, is that it's so easy to make something a scandal over there because, yes, they've lost two games in a row and that is a slight cause for concern. The record they had before it, though, you have to think there was going to be a bump along the way at some point with this Real Madrid team, just because of the way it's set up and the way it's played. And they've been able to bail themselves out a few times.
Bail.
Carlo Ancelotti's team, right?
Say again?
Carlo Ancelotti's team.
In what respect?
I feel like with Zidane, it's been an interesting situation. Lauren, stop it. Trying to make a point here, and you are nothing but laughing at me at my point. Before it's even
been a finger up my ass.
Well, Chris, sometimes you've got a podcast with a finger in your ass because it makes you a better podcaster. But in terms of Zidane, I don't feel like he's basically taken Benitez's defensive model, and he's not done a lot. And I feel he's taken something from Benitez apart from Ancelotti. And yes, they went on a 40 game unbeaten streak. But I feel there could have been other coaches that would have done the same way that would have been even more successful than him. You know, you come against someone like Sampaoli, gets caned, and they draw 3-3. Very, very lucky for Real Madrid. And they get beat, obviously, a flip situation where Jovetic scores on the 90th minute. But Sevilla outplayed them both of those games. And it was a managerial thing, a tactical thing that was the winning. You know, Zidane set up with a 3-5-2 match Sevilla's 3-5-2, which is very interchangeable, which switches between a 3-5-2, a 3-4-3, and a 3-4-1-2 in a way. It's so interchangeable. Zidane's like, okay, we'll play 3-5-2 and we'll beat these lads. Yeah, Sampaoli goes, okay, we're going to play 4-4-1-1. We're going to do about it. Zidane doesn't change and deservedly loses the game. Again, that's my problem with Zidane. Madrid is such an interesting club because you've got to deal with all these megastars. And yes, Zidane might be the right man manager. Tactically, absolutely not. Load of shit. Not good enough. And wow. Unfortunately, that will be Zidane's legacy at Real Madrid. Can deal with the superstars, but when there's actually a tactical problem out there to combat or to deal with, like Sampaoli, like potentially Luis Enrique might do, or potentially Diego Simeone will do in the Champions League, or Ancelotti, or, you know, let's throw anyone out there. There's going to be a problem.
I mean, Dave, does that not sound a little bit ridiculous, considering that he's just won 40 games and he must have had to make some tactical adjustments in that time?
I think it does. I think they've gone on an easier streak than, you know.
Oh, come on.
Yes and no. Yes and no. I think the players in there have carried that team a lot more than Zidane has made it his team, if you get what I mean. Like, it's more of like a Di Matteo thing. You know, when Chelsea won their Champions League, Di Matteo was manager. Was it Di Matteo's side? Potentially not. Was it a Mourinho side? Potentially, yes. Was it players that were Mourinho's players? Yes, it was. That's what I still feel. It's still Ancelotti's players within this Zidane team, and Zidane is kind of getting off lightly. When he tries stuff that's new, when he tries stuff that's different, gets it wrong.
I mean, arguably, it's Florentino Perez players, but yeah, fair enough.
All the players.
I mean, hey, Casemiro, etc., etc. But before,
yeah, what a player that he fucking didn't even look at for the first XMR games. Mad.
I mean, I don't think there's anyone in La Liga or possibly even in the Premier League, Chris, though, who could accept against us pasty as eloquently as Jurgen Klopp did. He was presented, shall we say, with a giant Ginster's pasty post FA Cup, to which he replied with the words, "What's that? Have you seen the pictures?"
I haven't. I thought it was spreading for a second there. I haven't seen the pictures. Is Ginster's a Plymouth thing, is it?
I mean, I guess so. I think they sponsor the club in some way.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, he was presented with a Ginster's pasty. So good for him, man.
Kind. Very friendly of them. Although the Plymouth folk are quite friendly, I believe. I knew one of them once. He was a very nice guy.
Great. Should we get into the questions?
Yes, let's.
Yes. Now, I have great questions for you both tonight. A long list of them as well. So let's get straight into it. Who was the first person to send in any question tonight? That would have been... Wow, we've had a lot. Wow. This is like when the podcast first started. We've got that many questions. This one's a good one from Flano, Flano 11. Do Di Maria and Unai Emery not get along, Dave?
It's been an interesting one. Di Maria has not been at that same standard he was at Real Madrid. Again, something that me and you spoke with about today about his transfer to Manchester United. A lot of money spent, what, £59.7 million? A bit too much money for a player that didn't adapt to life in Manchester, got 10 assists in his season and a bit. And I think it's the same thing that's happening at PSG, that his attitude is a bit stinky. You look at Lucas, a player that's really excelled under Unai Emery, a player that works hard, that tactically looks like he is listening to his manager. Di Maria is a little bit different, but he has that X factor. Everyone knows that Di Maria is a fantastic footballer, but getting him into your philosophy and getting him into your style. And unfortunately, I don't think it's there for him in Paris. I think that potentially it's time to move on. I don't think that the manager and the club, they bought him for a lot of money, but it just doesn't fit for me. Someone like Verratti should be the pinnacle of this PSG team under Unai Emery, and unfortunately Di Maria isn't there. You know, you're playing Lucas on one side, and then you've got, potentially you've got Julian Draxler, who's just signed, who scored a fantastic goal at the weekend. Where does Di Maria fit? For me, on the bench.
If it's FIFA, he fits very well, but apart from that, let's see. Chris Barney asked the question. Barney Jacrispy asked the question.
What an unfortunate name.
Yeah, he asked the question, it's more of a statement, but I'll phrase it as a question. Danny Rose and Kyle Walker, name a more iconic duo. I'll wait.
Oh, I saw this question. He wants the best fullbacks or something, or the best be after Rose and Walker.
Yeah, someone else says Grimaldo and Nelson Semedo at Benfica.
I was going to say that's a good shout. Actually, they're two very promising young fullbacks. Grimaldo, amazingly, only cost, I believe, €1 million when they signed him from Barcelona. There's a little bit of a frustration from Barca fans that he went for that sort of little sum. Semedo is just another one from the Benfica academy. Very quick, very aggressive. Shades of Maicon in that sense, like a really young Maicon. I struggle to think of better duos than those two, honestly. I mean, yeah, in terms of, you can think of a good fullback, but maybe not sort of proficiency at both, or ability, excuse me, at both sides.
Proficiency and ability in that sense. And adaptability, and also how well they play the team's tactic in that sense, because there are a lot of fullbacks that get forward and back very well. But how many sort of execute, you imagine, exactly what their managers want? Tricky. Dave, speaking of which, not executing what your managers want, now there is a choice at Manchester United, says MUFC Fresco. Fresno, sorry. The number 7 shirt is vacant. Who would you fill it with?
I think I put it in the bin for the moment. I don't think there's a player there right there that you want to throw it at. I wouldn't retire it. No, I'd just hold it for a bit, because there seems like there's...
Cry into it.
Everyone that gets it loses their shit, in a way.
Ronaldo?
You know, you think about Antonio Valencia, think about Memphis Depay, Michael Owen, and so forth. And I think that this United...
Ronaldo?
Sort of legacy, in a way, where you've got Georgie Best, you've got David Beckham, got all the great players there, Eric Cantona,
and so forth.
And Ronaldo, obviously, but it seems that it's a bit too much right now. And holding it back and being like, okay, you become the Ronaldo, or you become the Cantona when you're ready. Do you know, see what I mean? It's at the moment, it feels a bit too much pressure. I feel like keeping that back, holding that back for the right guy, maybe Antoine Griezmann. Give him that 7 shirt, he'll score all the goals.
Interesting. Okay. Chris, who would you give the number 7 shirt?
I hold it off for Griezmann.
Excellent answer.
Assuming that's who they're going to buy. Because, like I say, Miguel Delaney, whose story it is very well informed on Man United. So I would imagine if he's saying that it's, or that United are confident in the summer, I would imagine it's going to happen.
Dave, Ray Burkew asked the question, how close to orgasm does Dave get when thinking of Grizzy behind Ibra like Giroud?
That's beautiful. Very, very close. Very, very close. I love it how, you know, Ray Burkew, every time you even read his name, I can see his like Twitter emblem. Well, it's great branding from Ray. But, you know, I think it'd be fantastic. I think it's one of those combinations that would just work in terms of a target man, or, you know, whatever role you want Ibro to play, Griezmann's just going to be off him, and it'll be fantastic. It'll be so good. It'll be back to the days of him playing off Mario Mandzukic, maybe Fernando Torres, you know. There's been so many wonderful players that have played ahead of Antoine Griezmann, and every single time they've combined so well. But, you know, look at Olivier Giroud, a player that Arsenal fans potentially aren't the biggest fan of, but someone at the Euros that was so good with Griezmann. Zlatan is like the next level to that. It's exciting. It's very, very exciting as a Manchester United fan to have players of Antoine Griezmann's quality linked to the club.
Interesting. Chris, how do you see the squads of the top 6 teams evolving over the next year? Do you see any sort of evolution? Because obviously there are quite a few people in there that work their teams very hard. I'm wondering if we're going to see a few managers, at least towards the end of this season, have to take their foot off the gas.
Maybe webbed feet.
Good.
I think it's a very valid point, though, that because of the almost insistence from a lot of the top 6 clubs to play high, aggressive, intense football, how you manage that is very difficult, because in an ideal situation, maybe your 25-man squad would have a real consistency in terms of the level of quality. Now, I think physical quality is fairly easy to kind of achieve across that full squad, but it's the technical that tends to differentiate different parts and different levels. I would imagine, realistically, in the same way maybe you did last season, you'll see Spurs and or Liverpool suffer a small dip. The benefit from Liverpool's end is I don't believe they have European football. No, they don't, do they?
No, good point.
Yes, so that will play into it. Spurs, I think, oh crikey, where did they finish again? Do they have Europa League?
Well, they have Europa League now, but obviously they crashed out of the Champions League, yeah.
Yeah, so they have Europa League. That, again, that could, we talked about it briefly with Klopp there, that could be an instance where Pochettino looks at it and says, okay, this is the moment where I need to give Marcus Edwards, Harry Winks, those kind of guys, an opportunity to learn the system. Because that's the other thing as well, is that you can spend hours on a coaching field teaching players how you want them to play. I think you can't really substitute actual in-game experience in terms of the quality that that provides as a learning tool. And if you can accept, which I kind of imagine Daniel Levy would if it helped them in the Premier League, that the Europa League is not the competition you want to win this season, you can just use it as a glorified training ground and say, okay, let's put some guys in. Because I one of the things I think clubs get wrong when it comes to these kind of situations is they flood the team with youngsters, a bit like what Klopp did tonight. I can see why he did it, because it's Plymouth, with all due respect to them. But realistically, I think you gain more and you learn more about your young players when you keep a good portion, if not the majority of the team, as the first 11, and then just substitute maybe 2-3 guys in, because then you see how it would perform at its peak level. Whereas if you just flood it with youngsters, really you're seeing how the youth or the reserve team would do against the first team, which is not the kind of barometer you're after.
Speaking of Pochettino, youth development, those sort of things, Dave, I'm going to ask you a question from Shane. Shane says, why do you think Bielsa has never gotten a top job when so many great managers, e.g. Poch, Pep, have been influenced by him? Now, I guess I'll start answering this one. He sort of has. He's had big jobs internationally, and he's certainly been to very reputable clubs, but arguably never a top tier.
I think if we look at this in a political sense and how it compares to, for example, communism. Now let's put Bielsa as the creme de la creme of communism, guy that's pushing this through and pushing every single facet of that reality. And unfortunately, in the world with people and with humans, that doesn't work in a philosophy, but being quite close to that works very, very well. So adopting certain Bielsa characteristics, if we were talking politics, so certain communist principles in your world would work, but it's not going to work as a total philosophy. And I think that's the thing with Bielsa. His style, his philosophy of football is very intensive. It's very strange in a way where you're playing a 3-3-1-3, but it's all about the positioning and stuff. And I feel that people that have evolved on that, your likes of, your Pochettinos and so forth, have done very well from having a madman as the pinnacle, as their sort of Jesus character. And I feel that's why so many managers have come out and been disciples of Bielsa, is because they've taken a style of football and they've been like, wait a minute, we can't do this for a full season, we can't do this for the rest of our lives, because we might die. And we'll adopt these things, we'll adopt that, and that's the beauty of it. Bielsa is like he is communism. He is the guy that is dealing this pressing football, aggressive style that's very vertical and so forth. But taking a step back and being like, okay, what are the things that work in this Bielsa system that will be able to, elongate instead of having 30 games where you can play like Bielsa, 38 games of playing like Bielsa. So you go on to win that Premier League title. And that's why we're seeing so many great managers, Sampaoli, Pochettino, whoever we want to talk about. That is why I think it's it's a great ideology, but in practice, Bielsa's tactics don't work. And that was something upsetting that I found when I watched Athletic Bilbao, that wonderful season when they're not United out. Yep. Unfortunately, get to a point where you're too tired and someone like Falcao will come over, a capitalist pig, and destroy your life.
In many ways.
And score a hat-trick in the final.
Yeah, I mean, sort of works. Chris, this one comes from David Shanahan, 930, and he says, what's the best food you've had on your travels?
Good question.
Don't say tofu.
No, don't even give you a knife and fork. I would say it's a mix between my in-laws cooking, which is like Costa Rican food, mm-hmm. or there is a place in Queens, I believe, and I apologize if I offend any Spanish speakers, it's called Palo Santo, which is something like parrot in the tree or something like that in Spanish. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice Latin food place. It's just really, I think in general, I've really grown to love Latin food in the last 12 months.
Wonder why. And then Dave, what about you?
There's some good ones out there. I quite, obviously been around Europe and so forth, and if you get to a certain part of Europe, it's there's quite a similar cuisine. But I quite like embracing, you know, things like Indian food. Got some really good mates there, you know, from, you know, that's where they're born and that's where they grow up, or their family was growing up there, and there's some really good stuff there. Like I had a dal that was that I spoke about on the last podcast, actually, bringing this back, or the one before, that was just incredible, and I'm still not over that. And I love, you know, Indian food, and I like any food, to be quite honest. You know, like your burgers, like your kebabs, like your Turkish food, anything like that, just any food. I like to embrace all food.
You're going away this weekend with Stephen Housen, aren't you, to Leipzig?
Lots of sausage.
That's yeah, what are you going to eat while you're out there, right?
No, Stephen's eating sausage. I'm just eating chips, Lawrence.
Okay.
That sounded offensive. I think you're going to get an angry phone call from him here.
Fair enough.
He's ringing, Chris. I can see him. He's dialed already.
Chris, thoughts on the new...
Compromise. Phone down.
Thoughts on the new logo, Chris, of Juventus?
It's a very good question, because it's been quite polarising. So on the one hand, you have people that think it's an abomination and it's destroying the history of Italy, because Italy's got quite iconic badges to me, if that's the one thing I can take away from the league.
It's not iconic?
Well, this is the thing. So on the flip side of that, the people that I know who are kind of very invested in the digital side of things and work with clubs on that platform say that it's a very shrewd move, because it now allows them to position themselves as more of a brand than a club. It doesn't confine them to one sort of viewpoint, if you will.
Are you saying they are the team formerly known as Juventus?
A little. I see what you did there. Took me a second. I think, honestly, as long as the colours stay the same, you shouldn't worry too much.
There are some very old school pictures of apparently them in their black and white shirts with a black and white J on there, sewn into their club kit.
Yes.
But I don't know if that's true. Photoshop. What do you actually think of it, though, Chris, design-wise?
I think it cost $200,000 or something, didn't it? The design company charged them. That's a heck of a lot of money for two lines.
It is actually quite cheap, though. Relatively.
It's simple.
Yes. Yes. Dave, yourself?
There's a few up there. Choices. But I think Juve have gone an interesting way. There's been a lot of stuff that's been like posted on Reddit. Reddit's a great place to see alternative universes in a way. Someone's designed a really good Juventus logo using the same sort of the same J's in a way, and like thrown it into a badge, thrown it looking, you know, like a crest, and adding their titles and stuff. And it looked quite good. I think it's an interesting way football's going, and there needs to be people need to be more creative in the footballing world in terms of shirts, in terms of badges, and so forth.
Yeah, I wonder what it... I mean, first of all, I sort of think it would annoy me if I was a fan and midway through the season, obviously. I mean, I'm kind of tempted to go and buy Juventus' last shirt with this badge on now. Do you know what I mean?
That is a very good point. I quite like the old Juventus badge. I quite like what it was and what it does. And it is a bit weird mid-season. It's kind of one of those things that you surely, as a company or as an organisation, you should release at the end of the year.
It's a bit of
you know what I mean? Like the end of the season. Weird.
Maybe they want to kind of have like maybe this was sort of the point, is they want to have like a goodbye tour for it. And if you do that at the end of the season, you don't really get a chance to say goodbye.
Jesus. What was this? Like a person? A player? A manager? No, it's a badge.
No, Dave, it's a concept, and concepts are bigger than people. Although at the same time, obviously, you know, it is just a concept. Some people say it is to sell more shirts. Some people say... like you say, Chris, a redesign is a bit of a weird one. And also, why would you launch it in Milan? Anyone?
That would be
a bit of a laugh to be like, hey, AC, hey, Inter, how are you guys doing this season in Serie A? Because we're top of the fucking league.
I suppose a good point is maybe Juventus are sort of doing it as a land grab in that sense. But I mean, it would, if you did the same in England and Liverpool launched their new badge in, say, Birmingham.
Manchester.
Yeah, like Manchester. I mean, yeah, maybe Manchester is a good example.
The riots. A whip, absolute riots. Stephen Housen would have a petrol bomb in his mouth, holding a torch.
Definitely taking something.
I think it's best we leave it there. We're going to answer more of your questions on the weekend. There have been a lot of good ones, though. Dave, January BPL Player of the Month so far?
That's quite a tough one. Obviously, Diego Costa would have been the guy if he hadn't bottled his life. Maybe go Eden Hazard at Chelsea, or maybe Marcus Alonso, who's been fantastic the whole season. But finally getting into the goals, should have probably scored a hat-trick against Leicester City, to be quite fair to him. Pulled a shot just wide with his already taken two goals. So maybe, yeah. Or Christian Eriksen. He's been so good. Two assists versus Chelsea and then against West Brom. Just tore them apart. So I don't know. But Dele Alli, you know, you've already asked this question. It's so big already. You know, Dele Alli, Eriksen, Alonso, Hazard. There's four players.
I'm going to finish on this. Because I like it. Give me a second. I'm finding the article. Here we go. FIFA technical director Marco van Basten offers up ideas to revolutionise football. Anyone else seen this?
No, you tell me what he's going to do.
Chris, have you heard this?
I definitely haven't. This is news to me.
Right, okay. Fair enough.
Let's just read it.
Yeah, here we go. He says, no offsides, sin bins, quarters, and dribbling in penalty shootouts. Discuss.
What's Marco been taking these days? Bit of LSD here, a few beers there. Half a bottle of whiskey, you know, what the hell? You know, we're going to revolutionise the game. Yeah, we're just going to eliminate offsides. Well, so Lawrence, as a centre-forward, you are, to be fair to Lawrence would get in the game here. Lawrence would probably be one of the best strikers in the Premier League. Lawrence is very good at goal-hanging, but he can put these chances away. Which means he could just stand on the outside of the box or whatever. It's mental. These are the people that are supposed to be visionaries. You know, a FIFA technical boss, and this is what he's coming out with, to revolutionise our game.
Interesting.
Mental. But anyway, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, Chris, you? I mean, why would someone offer these things forward?
Boredom.
He's not banging the goals at anymore. He's like, I'm so bored, right? Let's scrap off that.
The thing is, people are constantly trying to improve the game, its setup, its format. You look at the World Cup, people are now looking to push it to 48 teams. The Euros is a similar thing. I think sport is something that rarely stands still. And, you know, I think if you look at it in the context of the entire history of the game, it might sound a bizarre idea, but I would imagine that removing the pass-back rule or those kind of things all looked fairly bizarre in the moment that they were pitched. But we now look at them as staples of the game and natural evolutions.
Tactically, without the offside rule, things are going to change. But, like Chris is saying, it could be quite interesting.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll discuss that more later in the week. It's been very good to have you guys on the podcast tonight. Dave, thank you very much. If people want to go find your work, go ahead. Where can they find you?
There's a YouTube channel, Lawrence. There's two YouTube channels, but there's one that you should click on more than the other. That is the front three, because there's something on Chelsea and who would replace Diego Costa in that side. I think you should probably click on that one, Lawrence. Where do I find that?
I mean, go over to YouTube, right, Dave?
What is the channel, Lawrence?
Oh, sorry, the front three.
Come on, man. You're better than that.
Chris, what about you?
Similar front three YouTube, the front three Twitter, but then if you want a more personal site of me, KHENEAGE.
Very good point. Okay. It's been good to have you guys. Join us this Saturday when we're doing a special podcast on China. Adam and I recorded that one just today. Don't forget to go follow us on Twitter, find us on YouTube.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And we'll see you again real soon, right here on the Front Three.